The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Bitcoin, FTX, what do you need to know about it? I've had one attitude since the get-go. It's a con if you don't like fiat currency. This is the fiat currency of fiat currencies. But now we have a massive, massive scandal. We're going to dissect it all for you today here on America First One-on-One with a very special guest. But first, let's listen to Sam Bankman-Fried's girlfriend, the quote-unquote brains behind it all, in a very strange interview for a podcast, kind of admitting, fessing up to the fact that it was all a scam. Let's listen to Caroline Ellison.
You have been able to pull this thing off without your mathematics degree, or it has been the pillar of your trading activity?
Yeah, absolutely could pull it off without my math degree. Use very little math. When you start out as like an intern and you do something and accidentally lose, maybe $1,000 for your desk, you're like, oh God, like everyone's going to hate me now. Like this is terrible. And over time you have to get comfortable with larger and larger swings of money. Trying to think of a good example of a trade where I've lost a ton of money. I don't know. I probably don't want to go into specifics too much with that.
Giggle, giggle, giggle. It's just so funny. Who needs math? And no, I won't tell you about the biggest account I lost. What does it all mean? Can we understand it? Is it just a shell game? Let's talk to the newly appointed co-host of Steve Bannon's War Room. She's a good friend of America First, Natalie Winters. Welcome back to the Salem News Channel.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, well, you've published numerous articles on this topic, on the FTX scandal. Your expertise in the past for us has been on COVID, what's going on in China. We're going to discuss all that and more. Please follow this lady right now, Natalie Winters, on Twitter. So let's begin at the beginning. I'm a complete neophyte. I'm a skeptic. Bitcoin is all a big con, although I do like, a financial system or a carrier of worth that is independent of the Fed and other government influences. But give us the basics. Let's start at the beginning. Who is Caroline Ellison and who is this Sam Bankman-Fried? What do we need to know about FTX? Because they had their own currency, but this is also a kind of aggregator of other Bitcoin investments. But you give us the 101, please.
Sure. I too am a Luddite in the sense that I think cryptocurrency is a scam. It always has been. And this whole FTX incident is just the latest example of that. But there's really interesting political ramifications, really worldwide, that you can sort of tease out from the unraveling of FTX. So I think most people know Sam Bankman-Fried. I think that interview you just played of Caroline Ellison is probably a close runner-up to some of the more awkward interviews that SBF has given. But Sam Bankman-Fried really became one of the leading donors to the Democratic Party during the 2020 campaign, of course, in the midterms.
The second biggest after George Soros, correct?
$40 million. But also other, I know you know that I talk a lot about COVID and the Chinese Communist Party. There are also links with FTX there as well. But Sam Bankman also been sort of bankrolling, using his billions of dollars to fund different advocacy groups that aren't even necessarily political expenditures in a campaign sense. But his brother,
lots of conservative ones, I'm sure, like Second Amendment pro-life organizations, right, Natalie?
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, not quite. One of my favorite ones, because again, there, as Steve always says on Warb, there are no conspiracies, only coincidences. But Sam Bankman-Fried's brother was actually appointed to run a group called Guarding Against Pandemics, where they deployed hundreds of thousands of dollars to run ads to help Joe Biden pass pandemic legislation. But before I get into the weeds on that, all of that to say that SBF is a major power player within the kind of ecosystem of Democratic campaign financing. But it's more than just that $40 million sum that was deployed in the most recent midterm election. But that's, of course, why I think the media has treated him so kindly, because he is sort of a darling of the Democratic Party. But what we saw was FTX unravel very, very closely in terms of timing to the midterm election. And this is something that really piqued my interest, because essentially the only reason that the implosion of FTX occurred after the midterm election, and by that I mean basically the day after the midterms, was because Binance, which people know is the Chinese Communist Party-owned cryptocurrency exchange platform.
What is that name again?
Binance.
Okay, carry on.
So Binance is basically the Chinese, I would say, counterpart or competitor to FTX. It's a cryptocurrency exchange platform, but it's heavily linked to the Chinese Communist Party, not just because it's a Chinese company, so therefore subject to regulation by Beijing, however it sees fit. But a lot of the higher ups, including all the way up to the executive of it, are, I'm pretty sure you would could say, documented members of the Chinese Communist Party, but people who really helped to serve the ends and advance the agenda of the CCP. So what I thought was very interesting is that the head of the global advisory board to Binance is an individual by the name of Max Baucus. Now, Max Baucus is one of these DC swamp creatures, so ossified. I mean, I don't even know how the guy's still alive. But he served in the Obama-Biden administration as an ambassador to China. He's a very close friend of Joe Biden's. If you read the reporting back during those years, you can see that it was actually Joe Biden who was the main advocate for his ascension to the ambassadorship, even though in his confirmation hearing, Max Baucus said, "I actually know nothing about China." So I guess sort of similar vibes to that Carolyn Ellison interview. But what's so interesting is that Max Baucus is the head of the advisory board at Binance, which, like I said, was really key in staving off FTX's implosion until after the midterms. So the day before the midterms, Binance says they're going to come in and buy FTX. They wait until the day after the midterms to say, "Hey, actually, we're not." And then we see all this chaos ensue. So for me, as someone who follows the Chinese Communist Party very closely and how these sort of swampy type Democratic politicians end up on the boards of a lot of these companies, I think to some extent you saw Binance sort of intervene on behalf of the Democratic Party to help save one of their largest donors from this PR nightmare and obviously the trillion dollar implosion that we saw happen, to push that until after the midterms, which I think is very curious timing. But there's, of course, other links to the Democratic Party.
Well, and what about Caroline Ellison's father? So the, you know, the guy who ran FTX, his girlfriend, who was part of it, his father is all connected back to the government and the Democrats and the Bitcoin cabal, is he not?
Exactly. So she, I think you could sort of compare her to like a shadow CEO type figure, even though SBF was the front of the operation, which is hard to understand why. If anyone's ever watched an interview he's given, he's not particularly the best at giving interviews, but I guess neither is Caroline. But Caroline's father, which, and I think this may speak to some of the flippancy that you see in that interview, her father was the boss of Gary Gensler, who is the new chair of the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, which, of course, should be responsible for regulating cryptocurrency. But that's, of course, not the case, as we saw FTX. I think the numbers, they sort of change every day. There's more and more reporting. But he was essentially loaning himself, I mean, over $1 billion, just artificially constructing the value of these random, not stable coins, but random versions of cryptocurrency out of thin air, essentially, because there was no regulation. And I'll add this to the whole sort of, I think, very twisted web of conflicts of interest and Democratic partisanship. So Sam Bankman-Fried's brother, an individual by the name of Gabe, was actually a former legislative correspondent for a Democratic congressman. His name is Sean Caston. I believe he's from Pennsylvania. And he's not just some random, you know, member, one of the 435 people that, you know, whose names you don't really recognize. This is someone who serves on the House Financial Services Committee, specifically on the subcommittee on investor protection and consumer protection.
All right, you're going to have to start doing these interviews, Natalie, with a whiteboard or like, you know, those detective movies with the pins and the colored cotton string between them, because this is how convoluted this cabal truly is. We're talking to Natalie Winters. She's co-host, editor at The War Room, Steve Bannon's War Room. Follow her at Natalie Winters. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy the one-on-ones, be sure to subscribe today. It's absolutely free. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Write us a five-star review. Share the links with your buddies because we have a republic to save. And don't forget the latest Made in America, America First gear at SebGorkaStore.com. The latest to celebrate the president's announcement is the MAGA is back, the return of MAGA t-shirt and sweatshirt. Get all your gear today. That's SebGorkaStore.com. If you're America First, you got to prove it. That's SebGorkaStore.com, SebGorkaStore.com. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm. Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics ready configurations. Class leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11 plus 1 with the standard magazine and 13 plus 1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Dear friends, right now, this is just a utterly shocking statistic. There are more than 1.5 million children in America who have a parent, who have a mother or father behind bars. What can it be like? Can we imagine what it must be like for a young child at Thanksgiving, at Christmas time, to not have a parent at home because they're in prison? I'd like to invite you right now to show the love of Christ by going to SebGorka.com and clicking on the Angel Tree banner. This is our prison fellowship campaign where you can bless a child right now for $25. Your gift of more, $125, would be five children, will provide them with a gift from their parent in the name of their parent and the word of the gospel. And just the message that they have not been forgotten this Christmas time. Last year, men and women like you, like our dear listeners, helped deliver Christmas gifts and the gospel to over 2,360 children of prisoners in all 50 states. That's how powerful your love truly is. The only way we can change lives is if we all step up right now. Please go to SebGorka.com and click on the Angel Tree banner, or you can phone in your tax-deductible donation at 888-206-2794. That's 202, or you can just go to 888-206-2794, or just go to SebGorka.com. That's SebGorka.com and the Angel Tree banner at the very top. Thank you. So let's step back a bit because, again, second biggest funder to Democrat causes, $44 million, but that's just a drop in the ocean of all the other things he was involved with and along with his brother and everything else. The announcement of the collapse was delayed because of the midterms, clearly. But why did this collapse? To me, it seems as if this is a classic Ponzi scheme. This is like the Bernie Madoff. It was a sham. It was a scam. And at some point, not only was he taking funds out from his investors' accounts to pay for himself, he was robbing Peter to pay Paul. So at some point, this just became a complete house of cards, did it not, Natalie?
No, I think you're totally right in that it was a scam from the get-go. And I think, you know, I'm not necessarily an economics expert, but I think when you look at it through the lens of the lack of regulation and the political side of it, I think that coming from the Hill, coming from the White House, there wasn't really any sense of fear from the FTX side of things that they were going to be held accountable or penalized for their actions. And frankly, I think maybe that's why they were donating so heavily to these candidates in the first place, sort of trying to buy immunity. And keep in mind, it wasn't just that they were donating to Democrats, too. If you go through, the Washington Post has a chart of the largest donors throughout this midterm election cycle. And a guy by the name of, I believe it's Ryan Salami or Salame, but he was another FTX high-ranking executive. But he was also donating, I believe the number was about $9 million to Kevin McCarthy and some of his affiliated wow. PACs, backing McCarthy PACs. So, again, I think when you see kind of going after both sides of the aisle, to me, it sort of seems like they were trying to buy immunity, forecasting what they knew that they were doing was wrong, and that there weren't going to be necessarily good implications down the road. But I think, of course, as you say, the tragedy in all of this is, you know, people who put their money there and now can no longer access it. You know, the money seems to have just sort of evaporated into thin air.
So let's actually listen. Don't take Natalie's word for it or my word for it. This is Sam Bankman-Fried in a very, very peculiar interview, kind of fessing up to how many people he's paying off. Cut two, play cut.
So how do you find political fundraisers? They come to you directly? Is it easy to get to you and say, we need this money for this candidate? And what type of candidates do you tend to support?
Oh, yeah. Well, if I pulled out my phone here and just looked at my last 10 text messages, you know, about half of them are going to be people asking for, you know, politicians asking for contributions.
It's a weird thing to kind of admit to, isn't it? That you're in the middle of an interview. Yeah, yeah. And I'm just getting hit out by politicos all the time for contributions. How did this guy get to where he is? I mean, what, he's 30 years old and he's caused, you know, $1 billion worth plus of damage. How did this all begin? Do you have a sense of how the con was sold at the beginning?
Yeah, it sort of seems like a get-rich-quick scam, on both sides, in the sense that you have SBF somehow amassing a net worth of billions of dollars, but then you also have, on the flip side, politicians just trying to extract every single thing that they can out of him, texting him. I remember it was big news when, you know, Anthony Fauci was texting with Mark Zuckerberg about colluding on COVID-19, yet this guy seems to be texting with, you know, basically every Democratic lawmaker for campaign contributions. You know, that's a pretty intimate relationship, in my opinion. But yeah, the origins of it are very, very, very weird. I think that there's a lot more reporting that has to be done. Like I said, it's unfortunate that the mainstream media isn't necessarily going after him with a fine-toothed comb, to say the least, going through all of how we got to where we are. And frankly, I don't expect them to. But some of the reporting from independent media outlets has sort of shown the origins of it, whether there's some level sort of government involvement in terms of propping up this company, the fact that it's headquartered in the Bahamas, the fact that Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, comes from, is the child of two professors at Stanford, and you have the brother who's very involved in politics. Obviously, Caroline Ellison's father is linked to Gary Gensler. And I'll even raise you this. Sam Bankman-Fried's aunt is the dean at Columbia's Mailman School of Public Health, which, for people who followed the COVID origin story very closely, really was a key player. And Columbia, of course, is home to Jeffrey Sachs, the, I would say, leading voice of the anti-lab leak movement. So I follow these, you know, crazy stories. I'm a researcher at heart, and I love tying, connecting the dots, tying these pieces together. But I've never seen a story, I think, that is so ridiculous in terms of the scope of whether you want to call it conspiracy or coincidence, in terms of, you know, from COVID to the Democratic Party to establishment Republicans to cryptocurrency to the Chinese Communist Party, all sort of converging and just happening to implode the day after midterm elections.
Yeah, yeah. As of course, the timing 72 hours or less after President Trump announced what happens, the Department of Justice announces a new special counsel to investigate President Trump. There are no coincidences. This time, well, you know, they might try to sweep it under the carpet, but I think enough Democrats lost money that there might actually be some consequences. We shall see. In the meantime, make sure you follow us on all social media. Natalie is on Twitter at Natalie Winters. Don't forget warroom.org for her and for Steve's superb work. But we are on every social media platform, bar the fascistic YouTube. So follow us on President Trump's platform, Truth Social. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Clout Hub, on Parler, on Getter. And most recently, most important, on my Substack. That's SebastianGorka.substack.com. My name, one word, Sebastian Gorka. .substack.com. Follow us today. It's free. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. If you enjoy America First, support those who make it possible. Great Americans like Mike Lindell. He is under the gun. You heard the story he told here on our show. Three unmarked FBI cars cornered him, ambushed him at a Hardee's to take his phone away from him. Why? Because he's a conservative. He's a buddy of the president's. He's a truth teller extraordinaire. They've banned his products at the big box stores. Even Walmart have banned him. It's an utter outrage. Let's have his back. The only pillow that doesn't get hot keeps its shape. President Trump loves them. My whole team uses them. 51 million sold, but he's got 150 plus items on his website. Amazing BOGO offers right now for Thanksgiving. Use my name and get up to 66% off. Call today. 800-829-8468, or just go to mypillow.com. But you've got to use the secret code Gorka. That number again, 800-829-8468, mypillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Let's pivot right now. Let's talk about China, which is your forte. Very strange cut from Christopher Wray, the disgraced director of the FBI, in front of Congress, talking about a social media platform, one of the ones that I am not on. Cut three, Chris Wray.
We do have national security concerns, at least from the FBI's end, about TikTok. They include the possibility that the Chinese government could use it to control data collection on millions of users, or control the recommendation algorithm, which could be used for influence operations if they so chose, or to control software on millions of devices, which gives the opportunity to potentially technically compromise personal devices. So there's a number of concerns there. As to what is actually happening and actually being done, that's probably something that would be better addressed in a closed classified setting, and I could see what information we might be able to share that way, but that's probably not much more than I could add to that, other than to say it is certainly something that's on our radar, and we share your concerns.
Strange way of putting it. So the FBI has concerns, about one of the world's most popular social media platforms that can track you, take your data, push information to you, skew algorithms to be part of a Communist Party propaganda effort. They have concerns, at the same time that they're actually doing things like raiding pro-life Americans' homes with two dozen armed FBI agents in front of seven screaming children. So it's weird that they have concerns about communist China, but they have much more action when it comes to harmless individuals who are pro-life. Natalie, can you talk to us about why TikTok is such a problem and who it really answers to?
Of course. So I think the first angle of attack in the early days of TikTok was that it was being used to spread pro-Beijing propaganda in the United States. In other words, this app, whose parent company, ByteDance, is effectively a state-owned enterprise in China. Its former CEO, member of the Chinese Communist Party, he's pledged to use his companies and apps to, quote, promote socialist core values. You can read, there's a whole letter where he goes on to say that he will use all of his apps to basically promote devotion to the Chinese Communist Party. But people were concerned that TikTok was going to be used to sort of shape the narrative in the United States about China, much like China has paid for advertisements and essentially paid for favorable coverage in a lot of mainstream media outlets. But I think the second iteration of that, the next step, and that the logical conclusion, which is what we're getting to now, and really is the I think more potent angle in terms of the threat that TikTok poses, is its ability to alter discourse in the United States about every other subject except China. And what I mean by that is that you see TikTok, especially with young voters now, really being a breeding ground for a lot of just far left, I would just call it degenerate content, whether it's really, really just offensively pro-abortion content, offensive gender stuff. Just it really is being used to push a far left social agenda. And I think that this sort of dovetails with a lot of what I've talked about in the past, the reporting that I've discussed on your show, which is obviously China's unrestricted warfare in the sense that they want to subvert the United States, take out the United States from within, and of course, advancing these Marxist concepts of gender identity, subversive ideologies when it comes to whether it's family units or abortion. That's definitely part of it. But I think that to compound that, why you see such a lack of an appetite, although that's an understatement, from organizations like the FBI and, of course, our elected officials now to go after TikTok, with the exception of Donald Trump, who tried his hardest to ban the app, is because TikTok really, really has mounted an impressive and a behemoth of a lobbying campaign, hiring a lot of former advisors, to very high level individuals. You have actually a former senior advisor to Nancy Pelosi was hired as a TikTok lobbyist. A former election director for the Biden 2020 campaign is now responsible for running the app's misinformation and sort of election censoring policies.
Stop there for a second, because I want to drill down for in a moment on why it's so pernicious. We're talking to Natalie Winters, editor, co-host of The War Room. Follow her on Twitter at Natalie Winters. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. If you've got daily pain, if you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, do yourself a favor and try this amazing product that is liberating 500,000 Americans right now, me included. Call today, 800-500-8384. The three-week quick starter pack will be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough, you deserve to know. Call today, 800-500-8384, or just go to ReliefFactor.com. That's 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. So there's a strange paradox with TikTok, and you'll have to unpack this for me, because you know I use things, you know, like, you know, libs of TikTok will post some new insanity from some transgender lunatic, and we'll use the cut on the show, and we'll do that every day almost. But I don't spend time on TikTok. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Truth Social, I'm on Instagram. There's this weird I'm going to just ask you to explain it to me. I look at regular state propaganda coming out of Beijing, whether it's, you know, organs of the state, whether it's the newspapers they own in Asia, and it's really cack-handed. It is really unsubtle. It's heavy-handed. It's like, you know, the conservative movies about God is good, you should read the Bible. It's not very subtle. The Chinese art of propaganda on the official side isn't very sophisticated. And then when you look at TikTok, and my gosh, it's so powerful. The short videos, the dopamine hit that 12-year-old girl gets from seeing that quote-unquote affirmation of transgender top surgery. Can you explain to me why TikTok is so more efficacious than the Chinese state propaganda usually is? Is it who they hired? Is it the métier? Is it the medium? Have you identified why this one is so good and so pernicious?
Well, I think the best way to answer that question is comparing the different forms of the application that they have in China and the United States. So there's the same TikTok app that's available in China. But if you look at what they censor on there, there is absolutely none of this transgender content, none of the crazy abortion stuff, none of the far left radical subversive ideologies that really threaten the, I mean, values that we cherish in this country, the entire social order. There's none of that. It's basically, as you're saying, this more sort of in your face, almost laughable, funny Chinese Communist Party propaganda. Whereas the censors and on American TikTok sort of seem to just have their hands off the censor button. Anything, unless it's, you know, disputing the election results, seems to go. So I think within that, you can sort of tease out, which, again, I think is a central thesis, at least of my worldview and yours, too. And then the Chinese Communist Party admits to it if you read any of their work, whether it's unrestricted warfare, unconventional warfare. But it's really about sort of weaponizing these social issues, because believe me, from China's point of view, as they're plowing tens of billions of dollars into making sure that their students are learning math and learning all these STEM subjects, there is no better way to make sure that going forward, the American workforce cannot compete with the Chinese Communist Party than making sure that all of our high school graduates are addicted to a social media application and more concerned with what gender is on their driver's license of the, you know, 97 available options than what grades they're getting, right? And of course, I think the best parallel, you know, when the Cultural Revolution started in China, they got rid of all the testing requirements for people wanting to get admission into school. And you see that going on here now in the United States, right? You no longer have to take the LSAT to get into law school. They just announced that. So my point in saying all that is that this is a broader campaign in the sense that TikTok, I think, is sort of an arrow, the tip of the spear, you know, one of the arrows in the quiver that the Chinese Communist Party is using to undermine the social fabric. But it's not the only one. And frankly, you know, the Chinese Communist Party has great allies in this quest right here on shore in the United States, right? Obviously, the Chinese Communist Party doesn't necessarily need to drum up some of this radical gender ideology stuff, this radical transgenderism. It's already here, but they've just made the application, as you said, in a way that delivers a dopamine hit that is so profound and so intense. You know, I mean, they track your biometric identity. They track your facial expressions to show you videos that you are more likely to react to positively, to get you to, it's, as someone
so,
said.
So people need to understand.
It's digital, you know, fentanyl. Yeah.
Your children's eye movement and facial expression is being tracked by an app that is run by the Communist Party of China. People, you need to internalize this. Maybe it's too hard to answer this question, but my curiosity is, why are they so much better, not just at filtering stuff, but at understanding what is the most depraved and degraded when it comes to our version? Are they hiring? Is it like Twitter before Musk? Are they hiring white woke leftists to run TikTok? Or is it that the Chinese, you know, officials running the US version are more sophisticated than the propagandists back in Beijing? Do you know why, you know, is there a personnel difference?
Well, it's interesting you bring up personnel at TikTok, because I think the answer to your question is that they're doing both. TikTok has been reported, and it is confirmed, that in their hiring processes, they grant preferential treatment to Chinese Communist Party members, because a lot of the operations that TikTok runs are based out of ByteDance, which is their Beijing-based headquarters. So, you know, you can read, I believe I've done the reporting on it, but a lot of the high-level executives at TikTok are actually not just members of the Chinese Communist Party, but in some cases, former Chinese Communist Party diplomats, former Chinese Communist Party officials. So there definitely is, in terms of the you know, concept that personnel is policy, the Chinese Communist Party is very heavily represented. Therefore, they can implement this sort of unrestricted warfare tactic that we're talking about. But in terms of the American side of things, I mean, it would be my best guess that there are, you know, obviously far left employees there. But I think in terms of the content moderation side of things, which I just actually had two stories on War Room talking about this, they seem to be plucking people from Democratic politics and specifically the Democratic Party. Like I was saying before, the person who, according to their LinkedIn and their position summary, that's running this sort of censorship operation on, you know, quote unquote misinformation, but particularly election content, is an alum of the Biden campaign in 2020. Believe it or not, Kamala Harris's former tech advisor from when she was an AG in California, he is actually now working with TikTok. He's an employee leading their like trust and safety team, again, working on misinformation. So it's just an interesting kind of overlap and revolving door and collusion between the DNC, CCP. It's foreign collusion at its finest.
Working on misinformation, not in the way they say they're working on it, working on it in the other way. It's been very remiss of me. It's Natalie G. Winters on Twitter, so follow her right now. That's Natalie G. Winters on Twitter, co-host of Steve Bannon's War Room and executive editor for War Room. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating. 500,000 Americans across the country, me included, but it's not just me. It's people like Alicia from California. This is her story. I'm a grocery store worker and was working doubles during the coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees did not get a rest. I literally limped to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That story could be your story. That story should be your story. Find out today. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G guarantee it'll by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. Call today, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. That's 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com. Thanks to all of you who came up to me and say, Seb, you look great. Of course I do. I've lost 42 stinking pounds. Thanks to PhD Weight Loss and Dr. Ashley Lucas. And after 20 years of trying to drop the weight, this system actually worked. My wife dropped 36 pounds. My colleague Mike Gallagher dropped 50. Well, he had more to lose. If you could shed some pounds, call them today, 864-644-1900. That's myphdweightloss.com. If I could do it, anyone could do it. That number right now, look at that. That's what losing 42 pounds looks like. 864-644-1900, myphdweightloss.com. That's myphdweightloss.com. All right, last couple of minutes we've got left with Natalie. She's got a new job. She's like a mucky muck. She's like super high. I have to look up at her because she's now an editor of the War Room. Yeah. No longer just a Miss China infiltration at National Pulse. Natalie, you are now at the tip of the spear for what Steve calls the Hobbits, the people of the Shire, the MAGA Shire. Give us a sense. You've been there now for exactly a month. What's the spirit like in Hobbit land when it comes to America First? Are people depressed like they were 2 years ago? I don't know if Steve takes callers, but I'm sure you're fielding texts and DMs all the time. You are at the perfect place to measure the mood of the America First nation. Give us some intel, Natalie.
Sure. Well, Steve doesn't take callers, but I've been pushing him to do that because I love the Vox Populi segments that we used to do. But I really think, and I'm not someone who peddles false hope, I think after Trump announced, I really think that 2016 energy, whether it's because Musk bought Twitter and, you know, all the voices that you used to see and all the great memes and posts that they would have are now sort of flooding the platform again. But I think that the hope is there again. And I know that the midterms didn't necessarily pan out how we had hoped. And I think that people, it hurt because I think people were looking to those elections to sort of get the, I don't want to say vengeance because that's a harsh word, but I think really retaliation for just the horrors that the Democratic Party has put Americans through, whether it's economics, this crazy stuff they're pushing on your children. So yeah, it's unfortunate that we didn't get that chance. Although I will say, I think the stuff that you're seeing right now, the fact that amnesty isn't going to happen, MTG, all the congressional inquiries into Hunter Biden are happening. That is great to be seeing. But I think people still have hope in Trump in that he is really, I think, the only candidate that we've ever seen go up against the billionaires, the donor class, which, of course, are coming out in full force against him, backed by Chinese money. As you know, I will always get to the bottom two, but bottom of rather. But I think the 2016 energy is back, and I'm glad because politics was getting kind of depressing. So I'm glad we have it.
Well, it's fun again because, you know, President Trump is back. You know, he is back again, even on Twitter. She doesn't sell false hope, and she knows how to use the word ossified in an interview. Follow her right now. Natalie G. Winters. She's the co-host of Steve Bannon's War Room, also the executive editor. It is Natalie G. Winters. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Digital forensic investigator Mark Lanterman was previously a member of a Secret Service electronic crimes task force.
There was one thing that got my attention, and that was a voicemail.
This dad called and told me, I love you more than the whole world, pal. Can I get some help?
That voicemail, apparently from Joe Biden during his son Hunter's drug addiction, is one of many findings Lanterman used to authenticate what is believed to be Hunter Biden's laptop data.
You're confident, based on your analysis, this is Hunter Biden's data and that it's real?
Yes.
This Delaware computer shop is where the laptop's backstory begins. Their records indicate in April 2019, Hunter Biden took his laptop in for repair, but never paid. After 90 days, the store considered it abandoned. Then in December 2019, the FBI subpoenaed the store's owner to turn over the computer and a portable drive of its data.
Whatever happened to Hunter?
During the 2020 election, versions were widely shared by Republican operatives, including Rudy Giuliani.
We have the entire hard drive.
But questions were raised about whether additional files were added to those versions. Then-candidate Biden labeled the laptop controversy disinformation.
What this he's accusing me of is a Russian plant.
CBS News approached the lawyer for the computer repair shop owner to cut through the noise.
We've always had
one clean copy.
And obtained a copy of what he says they provided the FBI under subpoena. Then we went to Minneapolis for an independent analysis.
Were you paid by CBS or anyone else to analyze the data?
No.
No.
I wouldn't want anyone to think that someone bought our opinion.
Around the corner, it'll lead you to what we call our imaging room.
Lanterman and his son, Sean, both digital forensic experts, recovered images of credit cards, a driver's license, social security number.
Just the sheer volume of what we're dealing with, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to fabricate.
And explained how files built up over years.
It accumulated over time, which is consistent with normal, everyday use of a computer.
There's some reporting about folders being added.
We have read these articles. We don't see that. So I believe that that's because we have a more pristine copy.
Hey, guys. Sebastian here. Hey, Jeff, what was that? Was that yesterday on CBS, that long report we just played a clip of?
Yeah, it took them a little while to put it together.
Yeah, weird. I've got to this thing. It's Wikipedia. I hate it, but at least it's the repository of or suppository of conventional wisdom. The Hunter Biden laptop story, they actually have a whole entry on Wikipedia, and it starts with a timeline. The timeline for the original story, the breaking of the Hunter Biden laptop story, if you'd like to write it down, all of you out there, all 3 million of you, was October 14th. Not this year. Not last year. October 14th, 2020. Yeah, right before the elections. 2 stinking years ago. Well done, CBS. You're only 2 years late. And Catherine Herridge... Are you ashamed of yourself, Catherine? I knew you. You're a colleague of mine at Fox when I was a contributor on Fox. Very messy lady. Your office was like a war zone, but a very good and solid reporter. A straight shooter. You worked your tail off at Fox. I would say you're probably, back then, one of the most respected, serious investigative journalists at Fox News, despite your untidy office. It was literally piles of papers on her chair, on her table. And then you leave Fox. You put your name and your face to this. Oh, we have verified the laptops. We have gone to independent specialists. They didn't take a dime from us. 2 years later? 2 years? I texted you to ask you today, well, first to inform you this story was broken by the New York Post 2 years ago, and not much need of verification required. Why? Because the computer repair shop owner showed the world the forms signed by Hunter Biden for the repair of the 2 water-damaged laptops he wished to have repaired, signed by him, that stated if he doesn't come back to get them within, what was it, 60 days, they become the property of the store. And then, when they become property and he finds what's on them, the videos of the prostitutes, the crack pipes, the connections to Chinese businessmen, Burisma, Ukraine. He tells the FBI in Delaware, and they sit on it. And as soon as it becomes a story in the New York Post 2 stinking years ago, what happens? Oh, here, Catherine. Here's an interesting verification of the authenticity Hunter Biden's lawyers demand that the computer repair shop owner give the hard drives back. That's weird. Because if it's Russian misinformation, like those 51 former CIA and DIA officials stated before the election, on what basis do Hunter Biden's lawyers want them back? If they're not Hunter's laptops, what right does Hunter have to them? Of course they're his. Hey, Jeff, was that mean of me to text Catherine Harris today to say, aren't you ashamed of yourself?
No, maybe if she waited a week, but not 2 years.
I mean, I think it's the right thing to do because she thinks she's being a journalist yesterday.
I know, that is ridiculous. Okay, to act like she's breaking news.
Ooh, look, we're going to have a very serious packet. We're going to go to a very swanky office. We're going to sit down with some experts. Look, this table, it's made of glass and chrome. Have you seen this office? It's really expensive. And these experts, he's got a silk tie on. He must be really good. And I'm a reporter. Look at me. You're a clown. You're a joke, Herridge. You know what you owe Americans after 2 years of sitting on this story? You owe us all an apology because you are no longer, you have just forsaken everything you swore to uphold. A journalist, it should be about the truth. You can have a political opinion, but you should be about the truth. You just sat on a story for two stinking years. And CBS, we know they're hacks, we know they're propagandists, but you put your face to this lie, to this, whoa, we broke this story yesterday. You discredited yourself, Catherine Herridge. You have forsworn everything that should be sacred to you in your profession. You owe me and all Americans an apology for being a rank propagandist. My only question to you, if you want to claw back a modicum, a scintilla of decency, how about you leave CBS? How about you resign today? Show us that you're not a coward and a propagandist and a flunky and a hack. And tell us just one thing, one thing. Why did your editors, because you didn't make this decision, you're just a reporter. Why did your editors tell you to drop this package now, 1 week after an election? Why? Why 2 weeks? Why now? Why now and 2 years before the next one? Is this to wipe it clean in time? You'd better tell us if you want anyone to respect you. I said I wouldn't do another angry monologue. Can't help it. It's the event. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. We have an amazing show for you today. Don't miss a millisecond. What's the truth about FTX? This is America First. Subscribe on Spotify right now. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Never miss an episode. And check out SebGorkaStore.com. We'll be back after these messages.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.